This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and here are headlines from some of the stories we're following here today at NPR News. With just 5 days until the election, John McCain campaigned in Defiance, Ohio, where the Republican presidential candidate presented himself as the real agent of change. Campaigning in Florida, meanwhile, Democrat Barack Obama attacked Senator McCain's record on the economy. And new economic numbers out today show American consumers have cut back on their spending by the biggest amount in nearly 3 decades, and the gross domestic product shrank at an annual rate of 0.3% from July through September. A moment ago, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 185 points. Tomorrow, Joe Palca will be here with Science Friday. He'll look at embryonic stem cell research as an election issue, plus sequencing the DNA of a frozen mummy, and a look at what MESSENGER saw on Mercury. That's all tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. Earlier this week, federal agents arrested and charged two young men who allegedly wanted to attack and kill Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama and a group of black schoolchildren. Agents identified Daniel Cowart and Paul Schlesselman as skinheads and said they had ties to white supremacist groups. Friends and neighbors of the two men say the plot was just talk. Even so, the arrests raise questions about the size, nature, and danger of such groups. If you have questions about skinheads and white supremacists, if they're active where you live, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. As always, you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation, where you can also find a link to Hate Watch, a blog by Mark Potok. He's director of the Intelligence Project at the Southern Poverty Law Center, and he joins us now from his office in Montgomery, Alabama. Nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Neil.
And you've reviewed this case. Did these men pose a real threat to Senator Obama?
Well, I think to Senator Obama, that's very doubtful. People who've heard about the plot know that it was this extremely elaborate thing which involved first attacking a black high school, murdering as many children as possible, then going on to shoot 88 African-Americans, then beheading another 14 African-Americans, and ultimately dressing up in white tuxedos with white top hats and hurtling in a car, guns firing out the windows towards Obama, wherever he might be, and assassinating and dying at the same time. Now, I think that's obviously ludicrous. It's something out of a Quentin Tarantino movie. But I think the reality is, although it's, tempting to dismiss this as, just crazy people on the fringes of the fringe, the reality is that they might well have made their way into a high school and started murdering children. So, I think the likelihood of Senator Obama actually being a victim was extremely remote.
Did they do anything in furtherance of the plot? Did they purchase weapons?
Yes, they did do some things in furtherance of the plot. And that, of course, is the critical element if they're going to be charged with conspiracy, which they have not been charged with yet. They did things like they got a map. They prepared a map of a federally licensed gun store that they intended to rob in order to get weapons for this attack. They also tried to carry out a home invasion, also to seize weapons and money from a random family. They ultimately were frightened away by a dog, of all things. But they had enlisted a friend, a young woman, whose mother ultimately tipped the police to this whole business, the whole plot, and that's how the ATF got to them. So there were those acts and a few others as well, acquiring weapons and so on. I think were the feds to bring conspiracy charges, those are the things they would cite.
And I wonder, when we say skinhead, what does that mean, and what does it mean in the context of white supremacist groups?
Well, first of all, we should differentiate between racist skinheads and skinheads. Skinheads originally were not racist at all. As a matter of fact, it was a multicultural movement, very steeped in Caribbean black music back in the 60s in England when it began. When we talk about racist skinheads in America, we're talking about essentially a neo-Nazi subculture of people who typically do shave their heads, who do typically wear these Doc Martens boots, these tall black skinhead boots, and a number of other things, braces, and they have kind of outfits they wear. But, what we're really talking about is a very, very violent subculture.
By braces, you mean suspenders?
I mean a kind of suspenders, that's right. Typically thin red or black suspenders. And often the color shoelaces that these people wear indicates, are they a racist skinhead or are they an anti-racist skinhead and so on. But, what people have heard about in the country at large, of course, is racist skinheads because they have been so associated with criminal violence, with, murdering police officers and all kinds of things. These two people, one in particular, Daniel Cowart, one of the two arrestees, we know to have been member of a group, a racist skinhead group formed earlier this year called Supreme White Alliance. This was based out of Kentucky, and in fact we have a photograph that shows Cowart with the leaders, or some of the leaders of SWA, the Supreme White Alliance, celebrating Hitler's birthday in April of this year.
Which might be a tip-off, but was the organization in any way involved?
Well, there's nothing to suggest that's true. And I would say, as a general matter, it is extremely unusual these days for an organization to plan and carry out a criminal act, mainly for the reason that they are so likely to get caught. So what we really see out there in terms of violence from the radical right is, by and large, what we would call lone wolves, people operating on their own or with just one or two partners, as opposed to being some kind of organizational plan.
The leaders of some of these white supremacist groups say, "Look, we're nonviolent. That these groups are tantamount to social clubs." Is there any truth to that?
There's no truth to that. I mean, they're simply lying. That was said, in fact, the other night on Nightline by Steve Edwards, who is the leader, was the president of the Supreme White Alliance. Edwards has at least nominally resigned, basically because he got a lot of bad press over this alleged assassination plot. But, Stephen Edwards is the son of Ron Edwards, who is the Imperial Wizard of the Imperial Clans of America, second largest Klan group in America, also based in Kentucky. And the fact is that this group is rife with criminal violence. They're also very into weapons. There was a special done on National Geographic very recently in which there are a lot of photographs or films shown of them, shooting up the place. Steve Edwards is also a singer in a band, and the words, I couldn't repeat on the air here. We'd have the FCC after us, but needless to say, they call for things like no mercy on the various categories of people they think should die.
Let's see if we get some callers in on the conversation. Again, if you want to know more about these groups or if they're active where you live, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And Judy's on the line. Judy calling us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi there. I am just amazed in this day and age that people really think this way. I mean, and the fact that he isn't, all black, he's half white. I don't understand why they don't even see that part of it. They're so ignorant.
Judy?
I'm shaking. I heard this the other day, and I'm going, hello, let's put these guys in prison and castrate them so they can't keep spawning.
Watch the castration language.
Exactly.
And the thought, too, for that matter. But nevertheless, are you aware of such groups?
Well, in Portland, Oregon, we're close enough to Idaho that you do hear about the white supremacists from time to time. And there was an incident back in the, I think it was the 70s, where an Ethiopian guy was killed by some skinheads.
Some time ago, though.
Yeah. But, you do every once in a while you see the graffiti. And I grew up overseas. I grew up in Japan. I'm blonde hair and blue eyes, so I know what it's like to stand out in a positive as well as a negative way, where you feel like you're an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just, I have never, ever, that I can think of, consider myself at all biased. I mean, I have to admit once in a while, I have concerns if I'm in an area of town where I'm the only white face, but for the most part, I don't. So it's just appalling to me that people really, really think this way. And furthermore, I mean, I would, even though it's like a Quentin Tarantino sort of a movie scenario, I mean, the fact that they would have that vivid an imagination is enough to be concerned.
Judy, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And Mark Potocka, she mentioned Idaho. Of course, there are an awful lot of people in Idaho who are not white supremacists. One would have to say the great majority of the people in the state of Idaho. Nevertheless, that state does have something of a reputation for as a haven for some of these groups. Mark?
Yes.
Idaho, is it a haven for white supremacists?
Well, Idaho has been. The northern panhandle of Idaho has been. It was made very infamous by a group called Aryan Nations, which for a time was the best-known neo-Nazi group in the United States. The reality is that that group was destroyed by a civil lawsuit that we, the Southern Poverty Law Center, brought in the year 2000. They were bankrupted. They were forced to sell their compound which had been a very important gathering point for various factions of the radical right every year. It's something called the Aryan Nations World Congress. You know, I think it's worth mentioning, though, that, you know, we see this kind of subculture everywhere, including Portland, Oregon. As the caller, Judy, mentioned, there was an important case, and it was much more recent. It was in the late 80s, in which an Ethiopian student was murdered, a man named Mulligeta Sarah, by partisans of something called White Aryan Resistance. And that ultimately resulted in a lawsuit by us as well that had the effect of destroying White Aryan Resistance. But, I mean, the point really is that these groups are scattered around the country in very many places, and they're certainly not limited to Idaho or the Pacific Northwest. I mean, we see them in the South. We see them up and down the coasts and throughout the Midwest as well.
Listeners may remember allegations of another anti-Obama plot in Denver at the Democratic National Convention. Do we know more about that one now?
Yeah, that one really wasn't much of a plot. I mean, as it turned out, these guys were there were three men arrested and a woman. And it turned out that they were very high on methamphetamines. When they were arrested, they were found with a number of weapons, including two scoped sniper's rifles, but also 44 grams of methamphetamine, which is quite a bit of a very powerful drug. Initially, the federal authorities said that they had planned to try and shoot Obama from a high vantage point, in other words, from on top of a building or something like that. Ultimately, as they questioned these people, they came to feel that it was merely a drug fantasy, that they really couldn't prove any real intent. It was simply, essentially drug fuel talk. And ultimately, they were only charged with A, weapons charges, and B, threatening a presidential candidate, simply in words, as opposed to conspiring to murder him.
We're talking with Mark Potok, director of the Intelligence Project at the Southern Poverty Law Center, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And next caller is Tom, and Tom's with us from Smithfield in Rhode Island.
Hi.
Hi, got Tom. Go ahead, please.
I'm wondering if anyone feels that white supremacist thinkers are in any way encouraged by the Republican rallies that are in some very white areas where they talk about things like we're in the real America, and they create this divisive differentiation, you know, or like Southern Virginia, Western Pennsylvania.
Tom, I hope you're not suggesting that either Governor Palin or Senator McCain have said anything that could any way be interpreted as white supremacist.
No, absolutely not. But the wording of it, I feel like maybe people who think that way feel like that's what they're talking about, that, you know, there's the other Virginia and there's the real Virginia.
I see. So that people may be hearing a message that was not intended, if
right.
That's a question. Mark Potok, what do you think?
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I think what is going on is that white supremacists are coming to realize that, the real reaction of white supremacists up until very recently to the Obama nomination and more probable presidency has been essentially one of shock. They don't quite know what to do. The movement was very split. About half of the white supremacists out there, including a number of their so-called intellectual leaders like David Duke, basically tried to see a silver lining in an Obama victory. Duke wrote that if Obama wins, it will be a, quote, visual aid, unquote, to white America. In other words, what a lot of these people are hoping is that if Obama is elected, white America, or a huge hunk of it, will be so shocked by the idea that their country has been stolen from them that they will kind of rush in their millions to join Klan groups and so on, and finally, you know, make the revolution and all the rest of it. I think that what we're seeing, we have seen over the last few weeks quite a number of expressions of real nasty racism. I mean, images of Obama in nooses and that kind of thing. And
we've seen Sarah Palin in nooses too.
That's true in one case, but I mean, there has been a real rash of the Obama stuff, and that's not true of Palin. What I would argue is that represents at least the beginnings of a real white backlash. And I don't mean to suggest that this is a huge movement, but, you know, we may be talking about 5, 10, 15, 20% of whites who really feel that the world as they know it is going away from them, is kind of collapsing around them. And I think the other aspect of this is that there are a number of things going on at once to make at least a certain quarter of the population feel this way. You know, the economy has gone into the tank. The demographics of the country are changing rather rapidly, without question. The Census Bureau recently predicted that around 2040, whites will lose their majority. And then finally, we have the very likely ascendancy of a black man into the White House, into the Oval Office. So I think that, you know, some people do feel out there, and it's not only members of the Klan or neo-Nazi groups, that their world is collapsing. They don't quite know what to make of it, and they're afraid.
Tom, thanks for
angry.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Appreciate it. Let's see if we could squeeze one more caller in. Joanna with us from Roanoke in Virginia.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Joanna. I'm afraid we're going to have to ask you to keep it short because we're running out of time.
Sure. I was just bringing up the point that I think that I'm from an area where I've actually known people who claim to be white supremacists, and they say it proudly, but they really are they feel very powerless. They're, you know, the types of people I've known who are economically disadvantaged, and it seems like they really don't have the power to carry out the types of things that they talk about. It is more of this fantasy type. You know, trying to feel more powerful, but really not. I've never known anyone who has claimed that, who would ever have the ability or go through and carry out a horrible act. But I still think that it's, of course, you know, mortifying that they have these beliefs, but and that it sets one up that if they were to be, I guess, in a situation, a tenuous situation, they could act in a very threatening way. But I don't see them as being this well thought out group in my area. It's just kind of, you know, this.
And I don't mean to cut you off, Joanna. I just wanted to give Mark Potok a chance to respond. We just have a